Welcome to Fuji Love. This is the show that is all about the Fujifilm X-Series and GFX cameras, but more importantly, it's about the photographers who love to use them. I'm Mark Sadowski, and this show is brought to you by Fuji Love Magazine. For the latest and greatest in all things Fujifilm X-Series and GFX, whether it's news, interviews, and so much more, head on over to fujilove.com. Subscribe today. And now, on with the show. Hey everyone, before we begin our interview with Kevin Mullins, I wanted to chime in and remind you that I have a new YouTube channel called Filmish. In my most recent video, I long for my X106 pre-order, waiting for that to patiently arrive, and I pass the time by exploring the various film simulations on my Fujifilm X-T5. Links are in the show notes of this episode. And now, on with the show. Thanks for coming on to chat about this. It's been Fujifilm. It's having the best of times. It's having the worst of times.
Yeah, isn't it just?
So I am here with Kevin Mullins. Kevin Mullins is a former Fujifilm X photographer. He's an XX photographer. I'm sure you haven't heard that. Yeah. I'm sure you haven't heard that joke before. you still are heavily involved with Fujifilm as far as using the gear, being an advocate for the gear. It is something that's near and dear to everybody everybody that's listening. You've had a chance to use the X106 or the X100 VI, depending on your flavor of text.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm no longer an ambassador because of some policy changes here in the UK, which is fine. I'm still very good friends and have a very good relationship with the team here in the UK. And in fact, I should have been in Tokyo for the X Summit last month, but unfortunately, because of the passing of a very good friend of mine, I couldn't make it. But yeah, I had the X100. I call it the VI, much to most people's annoyance. I refuse to call it the 6. Purely because, and I say this to people all the time, they say, it's the 6, Mullins, you've got to call it the 6. And I say, what did you call the X100F? Did you call it the 4? What did you call the X100S? Did you call it the 2nd? No. So mind, it's the X100 VI. And yes, I've been using it since, I think, like November time, something like that. And I love it.
So the big question, even though you are a big proponent and have been for Fujifilm, you weren't given any special priority as far as buying it. You're still waiting for your copy to come, right?
I am indeed. Yeah, I still actually have the sample, but that's going to be going back to London next week. So yeah, I'm waiting. I've put my name down in the ballot for limited edition as well, so we shall see. But yeah, I'll be paying full retail price just like everybody else, regardless of which one I get.
Right on. Same here. I am still waiting. According to my camera store, I am very close to the top of the list. Not that quite yet.
It'll come.
But I wanted to bring you on because Fujifilm has been getting a lot of flack for their X100 release, and I wanted to essentially have come to defense of Fujifilm for this particular conversation, because when I invited you onto the show, at the time, Fujifilm just released the special edition on their website for the Americas, and that went horribly wrong. And if I were to criticize Fujifilm anything, was for that release. But
days later, after you accepted the invitation to come on, Fujifilm made a great mea culpa, saying that they recognized that a lot of the sales were bot sales, and they canceled those orders, and now they are repositioning those sales to be a kind of raffle that is, at the time of this recording, has yet to be determined. So yeah. Big plus on that side.
Yeah, and I think that was Fujifilm USA, wasn't it? Each country is doing it differently, as yes. far as I understand. And in the UK, I think they did it really well in that it was a ballot. You had to enter the ballot, and then I think they've got 100 cameras in the UK. Those 100 people, I think today, the day we're recording this is the day that those lucky 100 people will be emailed, and they've been told in advance that they have to go to the Fujifilm House of Photography in Covent Garden on the 6th of April, which I think is Saturday, and they have to purchase it in person, bring proof of ID and purchase it in person. So there was no online sales of it in the UK, which will weed out all of the bots and the, I suppose it doesn't stop people from reselling it, but they have to right. jump through a lot of hoops to do that.
If I understand correctly, for the UK purchases, whoever purchases it is not able to transfer the warranty of that camera. Is that correct?
I read that. Yes, I did. I probably read that in the same source as you. I have no idea about the actual real policy in the UK. But yeah, I think that's the case. And, you know, I just guess that's another way of trying to stop people from quickly reselling. Although personally, I think that kind of, you know, that doesn't really, you know, that's bad on the person who would ultimately buy it rather than the person who's bought it originally. But there you go. You know, it's just another way of dealing with it, I guess.
Yeah.
And actually, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of electronic components, certainly here in the UK, that warranties are non-transferable. So, you can say that's quite a normal thing, I think.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, certainly in the UK.
Yeah. Every region is going to be different as far as what's allowed, what's not allowed. Overall, how, in your opinion, how do you think the Fujifilm X100 VI, how do you think the release is going, rather than how it's being perceived?
Well, I think, you know, I've had, I still get a lot of people contact me thinking that, you know, I've got some kind of magic telephone number I can ring and find out things and stuff. And I don't, but you know, my actual opinion on this is that, you know, Fujifilm couldn't do it right and they couldn't do it wrong. And, you know, they have no idea when anything is produced, whether it's a camera or whether it's a car, whether it's a keyboard or a laptop, whatever, they don't know. They can't predict the actual amount of pre-orders they might get. Now, if they could potentially say, right, we expect to get 1 million pre-orders, then, and they want to prepare for that, that means they need to build 1 million cameras before they announce it.
Yes.
That would take 5, 6, 7, 8 years. And so it would just ultimately never get announced. So they have to make the announcement. They then look at the pre-orders. They are physically limited, obviously, to the factories that they have. So, you know, they have factories in China and Philippines and all over the place that, you know, it's physically capable of making these cameras to a certain extent. And, you know, and they're just following a very, very standard manufacturing process, which is called just-in-time manufacturing. You know, you get your orders, you build the batch. You get the orders, you build the batch. There is absolutely no way on earth that they could know up front how many they could realistically expect to get in pre-orders and prepare for that. You know, so they have to launch, and they have to fulfill as many orders as possible, as quickly as possible. And the whole point of just-in-time manufacturing is that you ramp up the manufacturing. So, you know, I'm presuming, again, I don't know, I'm presuming that the manufacturing is being ramped up as much as physically possible to try and deal with that, rather than, you know, for example, one of the older, I don't know, XC lenses, for example, which would still be built to just-in-time manufacturing, and they are probably being ramped down, you know. So that's right. Manufacturing. That's the way it is, and it's the world we live in. And people, it has annoyed me quite a lot. You know, and I've been getting some pretty brutal direct messages directly to me saying, why aren't they, where is my camera? I've pre-ordered it. And I just think that's a very entitled point of view, I have to say. And I'm not going to be popular for saying this, but, you know, there are people in the world who can't even get water. There are people in the world who are living in war plate and being bombed, you know. And you really have to have some perspective when you've pre-ordered a camera that's going to cost £1,500, $1,700, $2,000, whatever it is. You know, you're in a very, very lucky place to be in a position to do that in the first place.
Yes.
So I think a little bit of perspective is needed by people.
And in addition to that, you pretty said it pretty succinctly. That's an excellent point. The ramp up process for increasing production isn't something that just happens overnight. It takes time for that build up to occur. So when you see more orders coming in that you could potentially fulfill, it takes time to reconfigure and ramp up that production. It's kind of like a traffic jam in that sense. It's it's going to be a little bit slow before it gets better.
Yeah, and also there will be very clever people that are far cleverer than you or I, who are planning this in Japan and also forward planning and thinking, okay, so we need to ramp up, but then we need to ramp down as well. So
yes,
that's the whole point of this just-in-time methodology, is that you can't just stop making everything else just to make this. That's not how business works. It just isn't. I mean, I remember, you know, the last car I purchased, which was, I don't know, maybe 3 years ago, in the end, I didn't buy it because, you know, they said, no, it's an 18-month waiting list. You know, it's built. It's built to order, basically, which is fine. I expected that, and that's how things work.
Yes.
It's quite straightforward.
It's same here. When I purchased my new Kia Seltos back last year, actually, in the summer, there were no cars on the lot in one of the dealerships, and the other dealership that I went to had like just a few on the lot, and I ended up buying like the bare bones model, which was adequate for me. I didn't need anything crazy, but yeah, the waiting list on any like a fully loaded car was insane.
Yeah, and it's not just heavy machinery like that. If you try to get the new DJI, I can't remember what it's called now, the action camera or whatever it's called, the little
Pocket 3,
the Pocket 3. Try and find one of them, you know.
Exactly.
You can't find them for love nor money either. It's not a Fujifilm thing. And, you know, it's like I say, it does annoy me when people are getting so angry about this. And it's not Fujifilm's fault, it personally, and I'm happy to, you know, to say that. I don't think personally I would not blame or hold them to account. You know, I know a lot of the people in Tokyo, in the marketing team, and in fact in the factories. I've been to the factories myself, and I know how proud they are as a people at the products they produce. And they will be working their heads off to try and deal with this. But there is no way, not from a business point of view, could they have just pre-made, you know, I don't know how many pre-orders there are. There were these ludicrous rumors that 15 million had been pre-ordered in China, which proved to be false.
Right.
You know, all these kind of things. But you know, let's just say, I don't know, worldwide in you know, on the day of pre-order, let's just say there was 250,000 pre-orders. I don't know. That's a guess.
Right.
They're not going to stack 250,000 cameras, pre-produce them, because what happens if there's only 1,000 pre-orders?
You know, exactly.
It doesn't work like that.
Also in defense of Fujifilm, the things that they did to take steps to make the launch as smooth as possible. First of all, they started production in China instead of Japan, China is able to be more flexible with their with their production. They're known for their efficiency. However you feel about China, love it or hate it, they have their act together with production. They did increase the output. I think Fujifilm reported that the version 5 had 7,000 orders, 7,000 units shipped per month, and they were able to increase that to 15,000 per month, if what I'm understanding is true. Mm-hmm. So that's another step in the positive direction. And I would argue that the X100 is in a unique place because it appeases so many demographics. You have the casual photographer that is really into photography and just wants to have a very good camera at their side. The professional will use it for street photography, have it as your camera for wedding photography, as you and I do. You will have it now as anybody who's nostalgic for film photography will approach that camera in a positive note. The wild card in this is the TikToker craze. I don't know how much stock I could put into this. And in Fuji's defense, I would have to say that this is an unknown quantity too, because on the one hand, yes, the X100 5, the V, that had a popularity on TikTok, but was it a fad or was it something that's here to stay? That's not really knowable.
Yeah.
And I think the one wild card that no one was expecting is the scalpers.
Yeah. Yeah. TikTok, I think I might be the only person in the world who's never, ever been on TikTok.
Oh, count me in on that one.
I don't have a TikTok account, so I have no idea about that. But yeah, I mean, I obviously know what happened with the X100V in that, you know, it got popular with a few mega influencers on TikTok, and then, you know, lots of people wanted to buy it, and that's great for Fujifilm. You know, I don't know whether what it says for the people who, you know, who choose to buy a $2,000 camera just because they've seen an influencer using it on TikTok. Don't know about that, but
yeah,
you know, they did. But coupled with that was the supply problem caused by the pandemic. So,
yep.
You know, Fujifilm had a big ramp up in orders for the X100V because of the TikTok stuff. But that was, you know, at the same time as basically everything was hard to come by because of the pandemic. So, you know, there was a combination of factors there. I assume there's probably still a few supply issues lingering from the pandemic, but probably nowhere near as much. And, you know, I think that, yeah, they have to be thankful for those super influencers, of course, Fujifilm, who would be silly not to think that's a benefit. But yeah, you're right. They can't possibly legislate for how that will happen in the future and how it will go forward. It just doesn't make sense. You know, like I said, I don't use TikTok, so I don't know whether Fujifilm have had a considered marketing campaign on there, whether there is even, you know, obviously on YouTube and Instagram, we see it, or I see it, but I don't know whether they, you know, they give cameras to influencers on TikTok for that purpose. Probably they do. But you know, it just always comes back to this, you know, if they could be told up front, you know, if they had the benefit of hindsight in reverse, and they knew that, you know, 250,000 people would order on the first day, then yeah, they can prepare for that to a certain extent. But you know, they don't, nobody does. And that's just the way it is.
Can you think of another camera that has had this kind of instant appeal?
No. Never. I mean, I've been shooting with Fujifilm cameras now for, well, I don't know, since the original X100,
which is
12, 13 years. Certainly not in the Fujifilm range. You know, I've always had, when I've pre-ordered stuff, I suppose there's some consideration, some conversation to be had over the lead time from announcement to availability. So traditionally, Fujifilm will announce a camera and you can pre-order it, but availability is usually marked for maybe a month or 6 weeks later.
Yeah.
Whereas for the Fujifilm X100 VI, the announcement, I think, was something like the 20th of February, and they said that cameras would be available to ship on the 28th, so a week later.
Yep.
So there's a little bit of a conversation. Maybe that's a lesson learned for them. Maybe they'll have a little bit of longer lead time in the future. But no, not with the Fujifilm stuff. I've never seen anything. I've always had my cameras delivered, you know, pretty much as I would expect them. And I'm told by people who I know who run camera stores in the UK and have been in the industry for decades and decades and decades, they believe this is the most ordered or pre-ordered or anticipated camera ever, you know, and that's quite an enormous thing, really.
Totally. Same thing. I asked my local camera store about this issue, and the only thing that comes close was one of the Sony cameras that wasn't available for a while, but that was due to, I think, supply chain issues rather than popularity.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is just unheard of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, it's taken everybody by surprise, and you know, it's just the way it is. I think it's all, you know, I just think it's a good thing. You know, yeah, of course, when you order something, you want it. I'm the same. You know, if I order something, I'm always looking. If I'm buying stuff off Amazon, for example, I'm looking for next day delivery, all of that kind of stuff. You know, we're an impatient beings. You know, we're that's the way we are. But I think perspective has gone missing from a lot of people. And of course, it's only the people that are moaning that we hear from. You know, for every one person that's moaning, there's probably 100 people who are sitting back going, I understand. You know, wait.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right. We're hearing from a vocal minority. And I mean, when has a chat room on a website ever been positive?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, I literally just this second received an email from somebody who said that their camera's just arrived today. So, you know, they're getting it there, and you know, it's fine. What was it, 28th?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. Cut off. It just dropped out.
Oh, that's weird. Yeah, I saw you go off for just a second. That's okay. I'll edit that. Yeah, the cameras are slowly and surely coming in. It is, according to my camera store, they're getting about maybe 20 at a time here and there.
Yeah. And when you think about how many camera stores are in the United States, that's a lot,
right? 20. And I'm just talking about the one that's in my region.
Yeah.
It's insane how much logistics that you have to keep track of and that you can't necessarily calculate for.
So this might be interesting to the listeners. When I was in Japan, I don't know, 18 months ago, I went up to Sendai and did a factory tour, and they were making lenses, and I went right from the beginning, you know, all the way through the construction, through the AF testing, through the quality control, everything, and it was a remarkable thing. But the thing that struck me the most was the logistical end of it. So basically at the end, all of the boxes are produced, everything's weighed. So they even weigh the boxes to ensure that things like a lens, microwave things, so make sure that a lens cap hasn't been left out or a hot shoe cover hasn't been left out of the box. You know, they can just tell that through all of the weighing systems. And it goes into this waiting area where a whole load of them are randomly picked out for inspection, just to double check everything once more. And then they all go through to this enormous warehouse, and they're all wrapped and put on pallets. And every single location has a distribution center. So, for example, in the UK, it will go via Dusseldorf in Germany, has its own, you know, tracking system, barcode system. And within inside that pallet is the boxes that then, which are all tracked and barcoded then for on a serial number basis. So each camera and each lens in that case, serial number, they know exactly which destination it's going to the store that it's going to be delivered to. So it's a huge, huge process, and one that's done with remarkable clarity and remarkable control. So, you know, it's not just a case of making the cameras, then sticking them in a DPD box and sending them off. There's all kinds of logistical things that have to happen there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane the amount of detail that they can track.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's you know, it's quite an eye-opening experience seeing that, especially the quality control. It's quite incredible.
And that takes time.
It does take time. Yeah, it does take time. Absolutely.
Do you think that there'll be that this is going to be the normal for the X100 series moving forward?
Well, you know, that's a really good question. Not one I've really considered. I mean, they took their time releasing the X100 VI. They knew, I think, when they would release it, because the lens in the X100 V was designed, the new lens that was put in the X100 V, that was the first time the X100 had a new lens, and it was designed to resolve against 40 megapixels. And though the X100 V came out way before anything like the X-T5, X-H2, any of those 40 megapixel cameras came out. So they knew well in advance that that sensor would be in the next X100 camera.
Yeah.
So it's a long process, and I don't know, what was it, 4 years since the X100 V, maybe five, I can't remember now, 4 years.
Is it thereabouts?
Yeah. So, you know, are we looking at a longer cycle for the X100? Perhaps, you know, and it would make no sense whatsoever for them to do like what they did with the X-T3 and the X-T4, which was announced the X-T4 practically within a year, I think, of the X-T3 being announced. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got a lot of stock to get through for a start, a lot of pre-orders to deliver, and you know, and this ship needs to sail and enjoy its journey before they start thinking about that. But yeah, I mean, who knows? Maybe the next one, X100 VII, as I will call it, will you know, they will obviously be looking at this and learning lessons. For sure they will. But, you know, they won't know. They can't know. They can't know what the, you know, what the orders will be like. And we don't know what the technology will be like. For every single time a new camera comes out from Fujifilm, I look at it, I think, they can't make the next one any better. How can they make it any better?
Right.
You know, but they always do. They always do something. So, you know, I think personally, and I think we're seeing this with all manufacturers, I think we're seeing a slowdown in technological advancements. And, you know, we will potentially move into the realms of more computational additions to cameras in the future, you know, and connectivity stuff. I think there will be kind of major upgrades in the future. Sensors, you know, as I said, the X100 VI lens will resolve against, as was designed to resolve against, a 40 megapixel sensor. So I'm told that means that the next version, if there is bigger sensors by then, will either have to have a new lens, or they aren't telling us that it can resolve against bigger lenses already. Who knows? But,
right,
you know, it's going to take a while for them to come up with new new additions. And you know, this is the reason why we haven't seen an X-Pro 4, because the X-Pro 3 was so good at what it did, and is such a niche little camera that, you know, is it good enough for the X-Pro for them to just simply stuff in the new X-Processor 5 and the 40 megapixel sensor and then say, here you go? Will that sell? Who knows? Because the X-Pro traditionally hasn't sold as much as the XT range. So, you know, they're being very cautious with that as well. And we're not getting any messages on the rumor mills about the X-Pro line at all at the moment.
I personally think they're going to take their time with the X-Pro line. As I understand it, now I'm hearing this through fourth, fifth, sixth string people, that the X-Pro 3 wasn't too hot, which is a shame because I loved that camera. The only gripe I ever had about that camera was that it was too expensive. I think they could have eased up on the titanium. But
yeah, I agree with that to a certain extent. And I think the X-Pro 3 was definitely a generational camera. You know, it had that weird screen at the back, which I didn't particularly like. And you know, there's been some production problems with that as far as I can tell, although I've got two X Pro 3s and I've had no problems with them. But it's certainly, you know, it's aimed at a much smaller set of people. You know, I prefer the X Pro 3. If you know, if I had the same functionality as my X-T5s in an X Pro camera, I'd sell my X-T5s in a heartbeat. You know, I love the X Pro.
The same.
But it's not, you know, it's not there. And so, yeah, I think, if you look at Fujifilm as a company, they love the idea of, you know, having a flagship model. And I think the X Pro is all in their heart. The X Pro and the X100 are there. You know, they were the embryonic stages of this X range. And, you know, they took a gamble all those years ago. You know, there was 30 people in the department. They took a gamble on the X100 and it worked. And so they have this idea of legacy and they have this idea of importance, which is very, very common in Japanese culture and Japanese companies.
Yes.
So I don't think that they would have a particular problem with producing a X Pro 4, let's say, and for it not to be flying off the shelves. But for it to be different, and it needs to be different and support this idea of the history and the legacy of the X range. You know, I think the XT and the XH are mass produced cameras to satisfy a need, and they're very good. Whereas the X Pro and the X100, I think, is a little closer to their hearts. And again, that's just me speaking really from experience of meeting them and seeing it all and, you know, being involved with it to a certain extent.
Yeah, I agree. It will be interesting to see how things progress, but I'm super happy that Fujifilm has been as proactive as they can be. Once the cameras are being sold through the camera stores, that is kind of out of their hands, as far as I know. It's up to the camera stores to sell the way they sell. So the stuff that the Fujifilm does have control over, they've been doing an amazing job trying to keep up.
Yeah, they're doing the best they can. You know, just like anybody, just like Kia, you know, with your car, just like DJI, just like, you know, the new Beyonce country music records, they can't produce enough of them. They're all, you know, they're not doing it to annoy people. They're not doing it because they think it's cool or hip or trendy. They're doing it because they, you know, it's the way of the world, and they're doing their absolute best to get them out there. I just don't see there any merit in complaining, you know, directly and saying they should have done this, they should have done that. They should have done what? Nobody that I've spoken to has given me, you know, when I've said that, what should they have done? They should have made more. That's basically as much as they can come up with, you know. And then I came to that with, well, how many more? Just one more? So you got yours? Is that all we need? Or is it a million more? Or is it 500,000 more? Or is it 2 million more? You know, how many more should, and that's it. Nobody know, you know, nobody can come up with a solid argument. And so, you know, I think that there are definitely lessons that can be learned, especially personally, in my opinion, especially on the announcement date and release date of being a week later. I think that's probably too narrow, but, you know, they certainly can't be held accountable for being popular. You know, that's just, you know, you go try and get tickets for, I don't know, I'm trying to think of somebody in the Bon Jovi in the UK. I think he's coming. You know, tickets are like £350. And the reason they're £350 is because they're selling out and people can't get tickets. You know, that's demand and supply, or supply and demand is basic economics. You know,
and there's a market that's been dealing with scalpers for God knows how long.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And in fairness to the music industry, you know, they're trying to deal with it, but how? It's very, very hard.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the day, you know, especially with, we've gone off on a tangent here a little bit, but especially with the music market. Yeah. Okay. Bon Jovi is a bad example because he's, you know, he doesn't really need the money, but the smaller artists who are not getting money now from record sales because they get pittance from streaming, they need to charge more for their gigs. And you know, and if they're in a venue where there's only 1,000 capacity, you know, they will price it to sell 1,000 tickets. And that's economics. That's how it works. Yep. And if they're suddenly really popular because one of their records gets played on Radio One every day, then, you know, more people would want those tickets. But because they've sold out already, they can't physically put more seats in the auditorium. You know, that's just popularity, and people shouldn't be dismissive of popularity. They should celebrate it, I think.
Yep. Absolutely. Kevin, it was awesome having you on the show. I think that wraps it up quite nicely. What are you up to now? You are slowing down from wedding photography, right?
I am. I'm basically retired from weddings. I've got a handful left, four left, I think, this year. And then I'll do the occasional one, but that's it. Yeah, I've hit that magic age, 50, in my life. And I'd always said to myself from the age of 18, when I hit 50, that's it, Mullins, time to slow down and do the things you want to do the most. So, I'm slowing right down with weddings. I'm still obviously still need to work. I'm still doing workshops. I'm still doing online education. I'm still doing studio work, and I'm still doing family shoots and my street photography, basically all the things that are, a little bit more easy on my aching bones.
I hear you. I'm, I got about 3 more years before I hit your limit.
Lucky you. When you get to 50, things just start falling off.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it. time is the one thing that, it just doesn't stop. That's awesome. Do you have any workshops coming up that you'd like to share, or?
I have, if people go to my website, kevinmullinsphotography.co.uk, and just hit the look at the four photographers links, there's all kinds of stuff on there. There's physical workshops, there's online group workshops, there's my presets, there's all kinds of stuff that's on there. And also that's where you'll find all of my reviews and personal photography and all kinds of stuff, loads.
And everybody should also check out Kevin's YouTube channel. Just doing a search for Kevin Mullins, we'll find it. Your channel is awesome, very down to earth, and I enjoy watching every time you have a new video up.
That's kind. Thank you, Mark.
Awesome. So excellent for having you on. We'll bring you back on for chiller times, I think. And yeah. but thank you for coming on.
No problem at all, Mark. Take care.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show, and I hope to see you back next week. I wanted to also mention one more time that this is brought to you by Fuji Love Magazine. For the latest and greatest in all things Fujifilm X-Series and GFX, head on over to fujilove.com. Subscribe today. And my name is Mark Sadowski. You can find me on Instagram or Twitter, mostly Instagram though. I'm at Mark Sadowski. That's Mark with a C. And you can also check out my other podcast, Xmark. It's a Fujifilm-esque kind of show, where it's more spice of life and pretty infrequent. But if you want more of my voice, that's the place to check it out. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon.